May it please the court, my name is Jack Donnelly, registration number 17119. I represent Johnstone Enterprises. With me today is Eugene or Gene Johnstone. He and his wife, Jamie, are the principals of Johnstone Enterprises. As a housekeeping issue, the trial court's order referred to a Jane Johnstone, and indeed her name is Jamie. So to the extent she might be referred to in any of the following further orders or opinions, it should be Jamie, not Jane. I think that's properly reflected in the record, though. This case deals with the unreasonable expansion of two easements. With regard to an abrogation easement, we believe that the court failed to interpret or make any effort to properly interpret that abrogation easement. And as to the ingress-egress easement, we believe that the court failed to recognize facts that were actually in the record and then appropriately apply the law stated in the Lazy Dog case to those facts. This case can all, the legal issues all seem to fall within the Lazy Dog Ranch versus Telluride Ranch Corporation at 965 P. 2nd, 1229. And I'll refer to that case as Lazy Dog as we proceed. The provision of the court's, trial court's order that we are appealing is that which enjoins and restrains Johnstone from erecting any structure that interferes with the passage of aircraft or gliders on a glider strip. That's at page 18, or paragraph 18 of the court's order at 319. The order that the court issued, the trial court issued, demonstrates that she made, that it made no effort whatsoever to try and interpret what that easement said. Yet Lazy Dog requires and states that that's the paramount purpose of the court, is to interpret the party's intent by viewing the circumstances surrounding the granting of that easement and the facts attendant at the time the easement was granted. In this case, interpretation of that easement is crucial. Indeed, there's really nothing inside of that easement that even indicates that it is a anything more than a flight easement or an easement that protects airplanes flying over the top. There's no clearance easement clearly stated. Yet when you look back and when that easement was granted in 1969, it becomes clear that it's both a clearance and a flight easement. That's why Johnstone didn't object. Under the circumstances, at the time the easement was granted, it's clear that filing one shows what the airport was that the abrogation easement was designed to protect. It was designed to protect the airspace of two runways. And what is clear about that is that not only did Helen Conover create an airport, she also subdivided lots, and she sold those lots with development rights. And if the abrogation easement was to be interpreted so as to allow any configuration of that airport, such as putting a runway directly next to the property lines, that would destroy development rights down in the future. And that would be at the unilateral decision of the airport, just as what's happened here. The airport has placed a glider strip or a runway directly next to Johnstone's property, and that imposes brand new restrictions upon the building that can occur on that lot. And
Mr. Donnelly, may I interrupt for a moment?
Please.
A question for you is this. General easement law seems to indicate that the dominant estate owner has the right to develop the estate, so to speak, over time. And the question for you is, what does that do, if anything, to your argument that the airport was what the airport was pictured to be in 1969?
Sure. And I think what Lazy Dog says is that the dominant estate has the right to develop its easement to the extent the easement allows that development. That's different than an unreasonable enlargement of the use of the easement. Just as in Lazy Dog, where the easement was there, the landowner or the dominant estate was trying to develop properties that weren't part of that dominant estate. They were expanding that use unreasonably. And in this situation, they're trying to expand the abrogation easement to impose greater burdens upon the adjoining properties than they could when the easement was originally granted. And if I can go a little further, the testimony of Mr. Elliott at page 773 tells the whole story. The question was, well, gee, could you put a runway, a new runway, on the other side of the main runway, on the east side? Well, no, we couldn't do that. Well, why not? Because that would require those property owners take down or tear down their structures. And we don't have any right to do that. Well, what I think Mr. Elliott and everyone has missed here is that development rights are every bit as valuable as improvements. And the fact is that Johnstone and every other person that bought lots in that property understood they were buying those lots with the right to build on them. And when they looked at filing one, they saw, okay, there is a runway in place. That's the airspace that the navigation easement is to protect. And whatever that runway needs to be used for, it gets protected. But they don't get to expand or enlarge the operations of the airport in order to impose a further airspace upon the properties. And I've cited some cases in the brief. I don't have them, I can get to them, but there are cases from across the country where just that very issue is addressed, where cities, public airports, have tried to enlarge in their operations, reconfigure their airports, and the courts have said, no, that's a taking, because you're now taking more property than you did before. And in this instance, the airport is taking more of Johnstone's property than it did before.
Let me ask for some clarification. You've talked about unreasonable enlargement, and I want to make sure that we're not just getting confounded by terminology. Is unreasonable enlargement simply a mirror or the other side of the coin of interpretation of the easement? Because as I view your assertions here, you're saying that the easement itself, while it says these particular things, can't be interpreted to preclude development because you have to consider the circumstances of time. But when you're talking about unreasonable enlargement, that sounds like a different legal doctrine. I'm not sure that I'm following that.
Well, I think the first thing that has to be done, Your Honor, is the easement has to be interpreted to decide what burdens it imposes upon the surveying properties. Once you've determined what those burdens are, then when somebody goes beyond that and imposes new burdens, that's an unreasonable enlargement in the allegation.
So your argument is that the trial court erred in failing to consider the circumstances at the time of the grant?
Correct. And she failed to consider filing number one showed that they were selling lots with development rights, with people purchasing those with the understanding they could develop on those properties, and no anticipation that they might build something and then 20 years later the airport might decide to put a new runway in right next to their property, and all of a sudden they've got to tear their property, their buildings down, or they can't build on part of their property. And I think that's displayed by the FAA regulations. And one of the confusion that seemed to arisen in the trial court was that the FAA regulations provide guidance as to what it takes to safely land an airplane. FAA hasn't imposed upon Johnstone. They aren't obligated to follow the FAA rules. But the FAA helps to define what the burdens are that are imposed by the allegation easement.
Well, before you proceed any further than that, I thought that the filing, that the second filing, filing nine, did have a clause in the map that says, subject to Part 77 of the Federal Aviation Regulations. Isn't that imposing a burden?
Well, and you know what, I think arguably, and the point of that is, and I think I think we're on the same page. The FAA regulations are important here because they are what provide the design parameters that help us determine what the burdens are of the navigation easement. And that's what we have demonstrated in Exhibit L at page 413, that shows that when you take the FAA burdens and you impose them and you call that glider strip a runway, you've just shifted an obstruction-free zone, or you've sterilized one-third of Johnstone's property. before they could build there. 20 years later, when the airport adds its new runway, they can't build there anymore. That's not what they purchased. There's nothing in the record, the public record, to suggest for a minute that the Johnstones or any other lot owner couldn't build on their property as long as it protected the runways shown in filing number one.
And counsel, real quickly, regarding your contention that the trial court should have looked at what the conditions were at the time of the grant.
Yes.
Of the, what's your authority for that? Is that somewhere in the Lazy Dog case?
Yes, ma'am. The court, yes, in Lazy Dog at 1235 specifically says that, that the court is to look at the facts surrounding the granting of the easement and the facts attendant at the time of the easement. Very quickly, if I can jump to the ingress-egress easement issue, the court found that there was a dearth of evidence to suggest that the airport was using the ingress-egress easement to access non-dominant property. And with due respect to the court, at page 803, starting at line 19, Mr. Elliott testified that their airfield maintenance guy was using that easement to maintain all of the hundreds and hundreds of acres to the south of the dominant estate to get the runway and buildings so we could check their condition on a regular basis. He uses it when he comes from his house and accesses the main part of the airport by going into the airport around that facility. And he, Mr. Elliott testified importantly, their plan was to use that easement for their general access to their entire airport, which is property well beyond that of the dominant estate. And with due respect, that is something they should have handled when they purchased the property. They should have figured out access before they purchased the property. And the mere fact that they've stated that they are using it and they are intending to use it flies right in the face of Lazy Dog that says at page 1238, an easement holder may not use an easement to benefit property other than the dominant estate. It's black and white, it's clear, it's unequivocal. Their acts going across that easement to access the south part of their airport is a trespass. And there's just no dispute about it, and therefore we're asking the court to reverse that, the court's refusal to issue an injunction in that matter. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time if I may.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Richard Haynes, registration number 1206. I represent Meadow Lake Airport Association, the appellee in this case. The main point that we want to bring to the court's attention today is that we do not believe that the Johnston's briefs contain a coherent assertion of error supported by any legal authority. There are really no legal issues in this case. We understand Lazy Boy, and we're not arguing with Lazy Boy or how it applies to this case. This case is essentially factual in nature. There are two factual issues. Did the fence corners and the for sale sign erected by Mr. Johnston interfere with the passage of aircraft in violation of the navigation easement, which Johnston admits applies to his property? That's the first question. The second was, did the evidence show an overuse of the 40-foot ingress-egress easement, which Johnston admits is a dedicated easement to serve the south track of the dominant estate?
Mr. Haynes, let me ask you a question. You said first issue is whether there was a violation of the navigation easement. But don't you need to know what the navigation easement specifically requires before you can determine if there's a violation? So if the trial court didn't employ the right legal standard in looking at the easement itself, isn't that a legal issue?
Well, perhaps it could be, but the trial court read the easement and applied its language, literally. The trial court found out, or found, that an easement was appurtenant to the Meadow Lake Airport for passage of all aircraft in the space above the surface of the grantor's property to an infinite height above said grantor's property. And she found, that the stakes that Mr. Johnson had erected next to the glider strip did in fact interfere with the passage of aircraft.
Pardon me, counsel, but doesn't Lazy Dog indicate that the court was supposed to look at more than just the four corners of the easement itself?
Well, yes, they did, and the four corners of the easement in this case, I mean, the argument that appellant makes, Mr. Johnson makes it in his case, is that they should have just frozen the airport in 1991 when the or 1970 when the first filing was made, and that's all. But it's an airport, and the easements said clearly that the easement was to protect the passage of all aircraft. And Mr. Johnson erected these posts out there knowing that that's exactly what was going to happen, that they did interfere with the passage of aircraft. And very simply, that's what the court found. It said that's a violation of the easement. We don't need to go any further. It says that you can't, the easement is for the passage of all aircraft. And these stakes and posts that were erected interfere with that. And the trial judge didn't feel that there was any need to go any further and try and decide whether or not the grantor of the easement had that in mind back in 1970. She said, that's the easement, it runs with the land, and you're interfering with it, you're interfering with the passage of aircraft, and that's in violation of the easement.
What about the testimony by Mr. Elliott that he could not, you could not, your client could not, move an airport runway over to the east side of the existing runways, because that would interfere with the structures that were already built on property adjacent to the airport? Doesn't that seem to contradict the argument that these restrictions apply everywhere?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
Because the thought of moving a runway over to a location next to existing buildings is a fanciful assumption in the first place. Mr. Johnston bought this property knowing of the navigation easement. The easement was there. The glider strip was there. The glider operations were there. The court said in its findings that Mr. Johnston bought the property knowing all these things.
Well, does notice preclude an argument that an easement has been improperly understood or applied? Lack of notice? I mean, I understand the concept of notice to be that when somebody comes to a piece of property and has no notice whatsoever of any use that's ever been made, if some person has been walking across it for years and years and years, they may have to live with the consequences of that use. Here, though, the argument, as I understand it, is that that it couldn't have encumbered property that was right adjacent to the airport, because to do so would have been to preclude the ability to use it at all when you put an airstrip right next to it.
Well, I don't think that, I mean, we're getting mixed. It seems to me that we're confusing the Part 77 features of this case, are the ones that were brought up in the trial court with the navigation easement. The trial court specifically and expressly said that Part 77 was no part of any ruling that she made or any finding or conclusion. And this idea of continuing the conversation and argument about the building of structures.
Well, but you can't, as I understand Elliot's testimony, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong with this assumption, isn't Elliot saying that we could not enforce the navigation easement against people on the east side of the airport if we moved the runway over there? And if that's true, what makes Mr. Johnstone different just because he came to the property and bought the property later?
Well, Mr. Elliott's testimony was in reference to Part 77, which talks about the obstruction-free area and the surfaces that are inclined from the edges of those areas. For the purpose of restricting actual buildings in the area. That is a much different situation than somebody having an existing runway, or whether it's a runway or whether it's a piece of grass. It was being used by the gliders for landing and taking off. And he intentionally went out there and built those things to obstruct their use of that area. And the court, I think, correctly found that was a clear violation of the navigation easement. We're not talking about buildings or moving runways. We're talking about the fact that Mr. Johnson went out there and intentionally erected structures, fence corners, and a for sale sign that were right on the edge of the area where the gliders operated. And they couldn't operate there because they would have torn their wings off. And I think the court made a clear finding that did interfere with the passage of aircraft and applied this very simple, plain language of the easement without ever talking about Part 77 surfaces, which the court specifically said she wasn't going to do that because she said that they weren't recorded and she didn't want to impose unrecorded documents in a situation at the airport. That's why, because the navigation easement was recorded and it was of notice to everybody, that she felt that the restriction that people would not, or that would not interfere with the passage of aircraft, is plain and simple, and Mr. Johnson had violated that in his building of those structures. The problem that I have with the Johnson briefs is that they don't refer to any of the findings of fact made by the court and show that they are clearly erroneous. This is a clearly erroneous standard of review, and there isn't one thing in 65 pages of their brief where they refer to some specific finding made by the court and refer to evidence, testimony, or exhibits in the record that make that a clearly erroneous finding.
Respectfully, counsel, though, I understand part of your opponent's argument to be that the incorrect law was applied, in that the requirements of Lazy Dog were not sufficiently met by the trial court. So that would not be a de novo standard of review for us, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yes, I agree with that. But I'm talking about the facts on which...
Well, if the trial court applied the wrong law, then does it make a difference what the factual findings were?
Well, of course not. But I say that the only law that Lazy Dog stands for relevant to this case is that they won't increase the burdens on the easement. And there is no increase shown here. There is absolutely no increase in the burdens. The burden was there. You can't interfere with the passage of aircraft. That was a burden that was there. We aren't enlarging the burdens. And that's what Lazy Dog stands for. Therefore, I don't feel that the court did not apply the right standard in making this determination. The matter on the ingress egress easement is another matter that I would like to address. The appellant or Johnson's position is that the trial court did not consider the future use of the property and the fact that there were plans, and Mr. Elliott said there were plans to develop the property south of the South Track, which is the dominant estate. And the trial court very quickly said, I'm not going to base any kind of a ruling on what you think the future is going to hold. We'll wait till the future arrives, and if there's an overburden of the use. And very clearly the trial court said there's a dearth of evidence And there's no real evidence that there's any overuse. Now, Mr. Donnelly points out to the fact that one maintenance man went down to his house and used the easement, and that's not on the south tract. Well, I respectfully submit that the trial court probably did hear that testimony and decided that one man driving over the easement once in a while to get to his house was probably not an overuse of the easement. But the trial court found and that there was no overuse of the easement. In fact, the court said that in respect to the appellant's notion that there was an overuse of the easement, the court found that there was no empirical evidence of overuse or expansion of the use of the dedicated easement because it was admitted by Johnson's to be merely anecdotal. In paragraph 17 of its order, the court also and again finds insufficient evidence that the Servian estate is overburdened by the 40-foot dedicated easement. And there's been simply no evidence shown that was in the record by appellants that there was in fact overuse. The court made this finding very clearly and said there's no restriction on the use of the easement in filing number 9, which created the easement. The court in paragraph 15 said the court specifically declined to make any finding as to putative burdens on the Servian estate based upon the MLAA's prospective plans for aviation development. She just found that there was no overuse now, and she wasn't going to base her rulings on speculation as to what might happen in the future. And I think that's pretty clear and the right decision.
Do you not acknowledge, Mr. Haynes, that use of that ingress egress easement to access property to the south of what you've called the south track would be a violation of the easement?
That's yes, but there's no evidence other than the fact that that one maintenance man lives on the other side of that south track, and he walked down there or drove a piece of machinery down there to his garage.
Mr. Elliott seemed to acknowledge that he had done that, correct?
Yes.
Why is that not a violation of the easement?
Well, I suppose technically it might be, but the trial court decided that that wasn't, that one person driving a machine was not substantial enough to foreclose the Meadowlake Airport from using the easement. In its unrestricted form to get to the south tract. That's what the court said. It didn't say anything about using it to get for property other than the south tract. It restricted its ruling to the south tract as having unrestricted use of the easement to get to the south tract. I see my time is up, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
I'd like to first talk about the ingress-egress easement issue. One of the things that's important about a court system is predictability. And another thing is to get issues resolved once and for all, not to deal with them again. And if we're not going to have a black and white rule, like the lazy dog pointed out, that says you cannot use an easement to access property that's not in the dominant estate, if there's not going to be black and white, then we're going to be back here again. We're going to be back discussing whether or not now the use is substantial enough. The point is that they are trespassing, and a trespass is a trespass. And they intend to trespass in the future. Their testimony, it's what their plan is. That's the reason for an injunction. That's when a restraining order needs to be issued. And accordingly, we ask this court to reverse the court of appeal or the trial court's decision in that regard, remand it back to the court, and have her issue that injunction and restraining order. In regard to the interpretation of a contract back now to the abrogation easement, It is a de novo standard. The court needs to determine and evaluate what the intent of the parties was in order to interpret that avigation easement and what its burdens were. Nothing, nothing in that avigation easement defines what the burdens are that it imposes. And that's why the court's got to look at evidence like the FAA rules and regulations to determine what airspace needs to be protected. This is not an adverse possession case. This is not a case where it matters that my client knew that there was a use going on. The point is it's a trespass. I can buy a new house. I can know that the fence from the neighbor is on my property by 3 feet. That doesn't mean that when I buy the house, they get to keep that fence there. That's the law of adverse possession. It wasn't pled here. It wasn't proved here. It doesn't apply here. And the court's finding that my client had notice of that glider strip has no relevance to the decision. Those posts don't represent posts. They represent hangars, tie-downs, maintenance facilities, all the structures and improvements that Johnstone had the right to build right up until the airport put its new runway in. And that is an enlargement and an unreasonable enlargement of the purpose of the avigation easement. There's nothing my client did. His posts did not interfere with any use of the main runway and was in complete compliance with the avigation easement as it applied to filing number 10. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.